You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wire. Their relationships with their girlfriends or their wife. No one, they shouldn't have more than one wife at a time.
You're back on The Wire, Tuesday Wire. It's 21 minutes past 12. Time for our second segment of the day. Connor, what have you got for us on the international desk?
Well, indeed. So this is kind of a follow-up to last week. We did a story on Macau last week, and this time we're going to do a story on Hong Kong. So what's been going on in Hong Kong? There have been kind of developments on the democracy protests that happened once again in 2017. They've been happening since 2014 with the umbrella movement. The government started cracking down. They've started banning candidates from running in certain electorates and constituencies. They've started jailing people for protesting on really frivolous charges. They've started really attempting to undermine the rule of law and the courts. So, yeah. Talk about that.
Should we check it out?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go.
Hong Kong is currently facing another surge in pro-democracy and pro-independence fervour as the government has made more moves in the past month to subvert the democratic process and handpick candidates who Beijing will deem acceptable. A week ago, pro-independence lawmakers Yao Wai-ching and Bajio Leung were released on bail and are facing 3 years in jail for attempting to force their way into the Legislative Council to take their oaths after being blocked from doing so by security guards. In the same week, Ventus Lau, a pro-democracy candidate for the New Territories East constituency, became embroiled in a lengthy appeal process after he was the latest in a number of candidates barred from running due to their pro-independence political opinions. Then yesterday, pro-democracy students staged a protest at Clearwater Bay, flying flags with pro-democracy slogans on them, weeks before the annual vigil that remembers Tiananmen Square protest victims in 1989. Over the last few months, Beijing has intensified its efforts to silence pro-democracy and pro-independence protesters. As Xi Jinping declares himself president for life of the People's Republic of China, and more Chinese officials denounce the 1984 Sino-British Declaration as null and void, the anger released in the 2014 Umbrella Revolution protests has yet to simmer. China's response has been a legislative crackdown, but among the Hong Kong community, where many are being financially squeezed, the lack of attention from the Legislative Council and the increasing number of immigrants from the mainland has turned the city into a powder keg. The Guardian interviewed a young Hong Kong pro-democracy activist about how these issues make them feel about life in Hong Kong. He summarized it like this.
Like, there's a phrase like a frog in a hot water. If you just put the temperature up slowly and slowly, you get used to it, but then you still eventually die.
So why are young Hong Kongers angry, and why is China trying to quell dissent via legislation as opposed to the military force it used on the mainland? To understand this, one has to understand why Hong Kong and its people differ to China. Hong Kong was a British colony from 1842 to 1997, meaning that much like New Zealand, they enjoyed similar rights to those in the rest of the Commonwealth, such as property rights, freedom of expression, freedom of movement, freedom of association, and the rule of law. The only difference was the absence of democracy, which only took place in 1985 due to a number of reasons. Until the Xinhai Revolution in 1912, democracy was denied under the racist pretense that a Chinese person had no understanding of voting due to centuries of conditioning under feudalism. After 1912, it was denied due to a fear that the colony would succumb to the instability and subsequent violent authoritarianism on the mainland. However, it was introduced in 1985 and extended extensively in the 90s under Governor Chris Patten with the help of pro-democracy Hong Kongers Martin Lee and Anson Chan. The idea was that universal suffrage would better protect the legal and economic freedoms Hong Kong has prospered from for so many years and would make communist authoritarian rule harder to take root when one country, two systems ends in 2047. Here is Martin Lee explaining in 1995 the importance of democracy for Hong Kongers.
When I decided to enter politics, really, I wanted to preserve the rule of law because I thought that was the most important thing for the people of Hong Kong. Without it, of course, our freedoms are not protected at all. And as a lawyer of some experience, I thought I could contribute to the community in that regard.
Because of this history, Hong Kong has a unique mix of Western influence and Chinese cultural traditions that give the city a unique identity. But it also means that it stands out in stark contrast to most cities in China, where outside influences never took root and where ancient cultural traditions had been crushed under the Cultural Revolution. Many Hong Kongers therefore see themselves as different to mainland Chinese immigrants who, they believe, don't respect the importance of Hong Kong's freedoms under one country, two systems, nor respect the ancient Chinese traditions Hong Kong maintains due to the lingering influence of Cultural Revolution era propaganda in the PRC. There have even been protests and riots by Hong Kongers against cross-border traders inflating the prices of luxury goods by importing them back to China, as well as a flurry of online videos showing mainlanders acting disrespectfully in public places, such as several cases where Chinese parents allowed children to defecate in the street and on public transport. Many Hong Kongers also fear Beijing is prioritizing Mandarin over the local Cantonese dialects, whilst also diminishing the importance of English, which some fear will cause Hong Kong to lose its competitive edge in international business. However, pro-Beijing activists and politicians say that the antagonism mainlanders face is rooted in jealousy towards the wealth mainlanders bring, and that a break from China is unpatriotic and bad for the economy. Essentially, the struggle that continues to grip Hong Kong in the years after the pro-democracy protests is one rooted in uncertainty. Hong Kong is in a state of limbo under one country, two systems. A lack of affordable living and increasing Beijing influence, along with a total lack of confidence in the value that Chinese officials place on the 1984 Sino-British Declaration, is putting young Hong Kongers on edge. The lack of confidence in the future of their country is one which is driving a desire for the political self-determination they were promised by the British. Meanwhile, Beijing is selling their growing influence as a way for Hong Kong to enjoy the fruit of the PRC's wealth. However, for many young people, that promise rings hollow when the modern reality of living in Hong Kong is overpriced 100 square meter apartments and sleeping pods for accommodation. However, the other key facet to this pro-democracy fervor is one that is rooted in identity. And this comes back to why Hong Kongers view their democratic reform so strongly. The fight for democracy is, in a sense, a fight for what it is to be from Hong Kong. In an interview with The Telegraph, former governor of Hong Kong, Chris Patten, explains why Hong Kongers are protesting and why these pro-democracy and pro-independence activists distrust the PRC so much.
It's true that the Chinese, which was probably always going to happen, cut off, contained the nascent moves towards a more accountable democratic system and broke their word in doing so, because they'd always made it clear that the system should be determined by people in Hong Kong. It's what Liu Ping promised, it's what the foreign ministry promised. But that was sort of predictable. I think what's slightly disturbing is the further we've got away from 1997, the more of there have been signs of Beijing turning its back on the Joint Declaration and starting to apply a bit of pressure to Hong Kong's windpipe.
The key democratic freedoms we enjoy in New Zealand are seen by Hong Kongers to define the wealth the city acquired under British rule. Though Hong Kongers have their own issues with imperialism, the opinion generally holds that the political and legal structures brought by the UK stopped Hong Kong from falling under the brutal authoritarianism China experienced under Mao. Therefore, the desire for young Hong Kongers to maintain their autonomy or even break away from the PRC is seen not only to be a consolidation of their political future and economic prospects, but also their unique identity as Hong Kongers. However, in Beijing, this protest movement is seen as an unnecessary inconvenience by many officials, and these officials fear that this could spread to Tibet and Xinjiang if Beijing backs down on the issues Hong Kongers are fighting for. And the Communist Party under Xi Jinping will not allow that, considering their recent move to consolidate long-term power in the CCP. On the issue of pro-democracy activists being barred from entry into elections by virtue of them calling for accountability and criticising Beijing, is being described by Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International as a regression of political freedoms. Yet these young people feel like the uncertainty in their future must be decided by utilising the centuries-old Hong Kong tradition of protest in the street. Time will tell how Beijing handles the situation there. But as Patton went on to say when he commented on the actions of 2014 Umbrella Movement leaders Joshua Wong and Nathan Law, the urgency with which the younger generation want democracy is a headache for the PRC that will not go away anytime soon.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Outstanding report, Connor, and just in terms of, I guess, New Zealand in that respect, in terms of this report, what our relationship with Hong Kong and how might this affect our trading with Hong Kong?
Well, I mean, after I did that report, I watched an interview with Chris Patten, who was the last clip that we had, last ever governor of Hong Kong. And he said that a lot of countries in the West have this idea that in order to trade with China, that you need to kind of tiptoe around the political issues or stay silent on those. And Patten patently disagreed with that. And that's clear because the Chinese called him all sorts of names through the 90s because he played hardball over Hong Kong. I think that's something that sitting in New Zealand, when we talk about trading with China or having a political relationship with China, you know, we are a country that values human rights and free speech and freedom of association and all those beautiful things. And I feel like we should be, if there are people in China who are fighting for that and are being repressed, I feel like we should speak out on that. You know, that's and I think that a lot of the British government is seeing similar calls too, as is the American one from the population about speaking out in Hong Kong.
So would you say at the moment New Zealand's doing the tiptoeing?
A little bit, because, you know, got to sell that beautiful dairy, all those beautiful dairy products and meat products to rich Chinese customers.
True, I guess it's the PC way to do it, but yeah, it's very interesting. And thank you very much.
One last thing as well, actually, now that you mentioned trade too, very quickly, Patten went on and he said that if you look at the way the Chinese trade with Western companies, there's a lot of barriers compared to when Chinese companies trade with the West. Think about how that translates into politics, and then you see how, when you're talking about sensitive political issues, there's a lot of barriers, a lot of running around and all that. And so New Zealand needs to remember that, but not be scared of it too. Yeah.
Cool. Great work as always. Thank you, Connor. Cool. Appreciate your stuff.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.